Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Teska and the rest of the Blessed have accepted Brother Hallam's offer to lead them through the caves and enter the abbey from below. Chapter 39. The Blessed were shivering, their thin tunics offering little protection against the cool air in the caves. The monks were faring no better in their small clothes, their robes taken as part of Kelisandra's plan to seize the abbey, but they showed less discomfort. Teska decided it was because they had a better sense of how long this underground journey would take, and that lack of uncertainty steeled their resolve. The only one of their group who seemed oblivious to the cold was Molly, who had regained consciousness when they had abandoned the wagon to reach the cave entrance. She took the news of Angus's death with silent grief and a short prayer, allowing herself to be led into the cave and giving no objections to the plan of retreating inside the abbey. However, it was clear that, like the Blessed, she didn't relish the idea. She walked by herself for the most part, the others keeping their distance out of a mixture of respect and fear. Only Liam came close, offering a hand to help her climb over a steep rock or navigate a narrow space, but Teska could see that the former acolyte wavered between treating her like the little girl she'd been to him and a living embodiment of the triad's power, a holy prophet requiring deference. He also saw that Molly was acutely aware of Liam's confusion, but didn't know what to do about it, having too many questions of her own to answer his. Instead, when Teska glanced at her, she was most often staring back at him. He didn't need any further evidence that Molly's vision was as sharp as his than that. They had found a small hidden cache of torches in the cave entrance, set there by monks some time in the past, in case anyone needed to travel the tunnel in this direction, but they only lit two at a time to conserve them. Brother Hallam led the way, carrying one torch, and Liam, near the back of the column, carried the other. Consequently, the light was very poor for the most part, and if Molly didn't have the same sort of night vision that Teska now did, she'd never have been able to pick him out in the gloom at this distance. Teska moved up to the front of the column to join Brother Hallam. "How much farther? We've been down here for at least a few hours."
"More than a few," the monk replied. "The sun has set."
He sighed.
"The conditions seemed promising for stargazing tonight."
"You're an astronomer."
"That is my calling," the monk confirmed. "But there is not much further to go. We should be on the outskirts of the farmstead."
"Full circle," Teska said wryly. "Almost. How far beneath the ground are we?"
"Here, less than 100 feet, I should think. The final stage will be uphill, more a climb than a walk, as we rise to the level of the tunnel that goes beneath the abbey's walls."
"Perhaps we should take a quick rest before making that climb."
"An excellent idea. There will be another chamber ahead presently where we can stop."
This news was received with shivering welcome from everyone, and when Hallam brought them into the chamber, the Blessed and monks each clustered into tight groups to stay warm. Molly sat by herself, watching Teska, Yvette, and Leah move around, checking on everyone, but she remained silent until Teska approached her. "You're not feeling the cold, are you?" he asked her.
"Feeling it, aye, but the Triad's grace keeps me warm."
Curious at her response, Teska expanded his vision, but very slowly, trying not to be overwhelmed by the strength of her aura, and as he had suspected, there was a mild pattern coursing through her body, especially through her hands, feet, and head. Keeping her extremities warm, Teska realized. She's probably not even aware of what she's doing.
"Your eyes," Molly said suddenly, standing up and closing with him, "have the sight of the triad, you do."
Teska had to look away as she drew near, shutting down his extra perception before her power dazzled him. When he turned back to face her, she was curious.
"Back to normal? Why did you stop?"
"I'm not used to seeing things that way. It makes me dizzy."
She gave him a knowing smile.
"Aye, that's how it was for me at first."
As he watched, her own pupils dilated even wider than they had been, her expression taking on a faraway look.
Still wouldn't want to walk around when using the sight, she said. Doesn't reveal everything in equal measure.
What do you mean?
She gazed at him, and whatever it was she saw there made her sigh in contentment. Power of the triads all around us. You've surely seen that by now. But gathers in some places more than others, it does. There's a few trees among the small groves around the camp that glow like a bonfire under the sight. But then you can't see the other trees so well anymore. You try walking toward one of the glowing ones, you're like to walk straight into one of the others.
I'll try to remember that. So, you've seen the power concentrated around some trees. What about animals?
She laughed. Few animals around the camp that haven't gone into the pot. Haven't seen any with the power.
And people?
You're the first.
She closed her eyes and tilted her head back, as if she was basking in sunlight.
Sensed you the moment you entered the camp, I did.
She paused, and when her eyes opened, the pupils were normal again.
Harder to think straight with the sight upon me, she said with a nervous laugh. Triad's power takes my breath away, it does. So, your arrival. Always visit the caravans when they first come, I do. Looking for those the Triad's chosen for healing.
How do you know who's been chosen?
I just do, she said. Most often they've an ailment I've not seen before. Talk to them a bit, hear their story, and I start thinking on how such an affliction as they have might be cured. If the Triad's chosen that person, she touched her temple, the answer comes to me. Not how it was with you, though.
No. She shook her head.
Felt the power in you from the first, I did. Faint, though, like a lamp behind a crumbling wall, glow coming through the cracks. Needed the sight to pick you out of the others in the caravan. Dying you were. Would have died on the road but for the Triad's power.
It kept me alive, Tesca replied, half question, half realization.
Aye, turned inward it was, fighting the rot in your belly. Not strong enough to win, mind you, but helped you endure.
I wouldn't want to endure that again, Tesca said, remembering the delirious agony with a shudder. Then you healed me.
Helped, I did, she corrected. No more than that. You were already doing what was needed. Just added my strength to yours.
She smiled at him.
Doubt you'll need my help again, though. That wall blocking the lamps come down.
Are you saying that something was blocking this power within me?
Molly shrugged. Triad had no need of you until now. Not for us to know their purpose.
She frowned at him, looking doubtful.
You're not who I'd imagined they'd send, though. Said you're a Gideon Ranger named Travis, you did. Folk call you the Sun Reborn, and you don't stop them.
She pointed at Yvette.
She and the other one, the old Silver Tongue, they're called Daughter and Father, but they don't carry the power within them as you do, and that gave me doubts, won't deny it. Didn't know what to make of you, but then you spoke to Oswald, and as you calmed him, the Triad showed me what was needed to heal him. Just needed you to show me the way, I did.
She paused, frowning.
Now, I've no notion which way to turn. Mother gone to battle, you arrested as a spy, and you consort with elves?
She flushed, all her uncertainty pouring out of her now.
And Angus, dear Angus, you killed him.
Yes, I didn't want to, but he was about to murder Harlan and the other Blessed.
I know, she said bitterly. Never seen him so full of rage. Never thought he'd strike me. Couldn't make him understand. Couldn't make him see.
She started to cry now in earnest.
But how could I, when there's no clear road before me? Can't see the Triad's purpose in this.
With desperate fury, she gripped the front of his tunic in both hands.
Is your name not Travis?
No, Tesca replied. It's Tesca.
Are you an Imperial spy?
Not exactly. I was born in County Ferlin, but grew up in the Empire and was trained as, well, yes, as a spy. I came to the Freeze a few years ago and entered into the service of the Duke of Kohaya.
As a spy, Molly said.
Yes, as a spy, Tesca shrugged. Your mother must have used spies during her campaigns against the Kefi.
Aye, she did, but never trusted them entire, the girl sniffed, her hysteria fading. Unnecessary evil at best, she'd say.
Well, there's a point she and I would agree on.
Molly gave a nervous laugh and flashed him a tentative smile. She fidgeted for a moment, then one question finally broke free of the others. "What's the tithe?" The blurted question echoed through the small cave, bringing all other conversation to a halt. She pointed to the huddled cluster of blessed. "There's fear on their faces when they heard the word. What is it?"
"I'll tell you," he promised, "but it's not a quick answer, and the triad's grace isn't keeping the rest of us warm."
Molly flushed at that, looking guilty and embarrassed. "I'm sorry."
"It's all right. You have a lot of questions, and they deserve answers. We'll find them."
She smiled up at him, and he put a sympathetic hand on her shoulder. The pins and needles sensation that coursed through his palm as he touched her was intense, almost painful, but he endured it without reacting. "Forget her power," he told himself. "She's a confused young woman, as scared as anyone else here. When we get to the Abbey, we'll both get the answers we need."
"Brother Hollum," he called out, "let's get started."
The last stage of their journey through the caves was, as Hollum had promised, more of a climb than a walk, but it was not especially difficult. Everyone was tired, cold, and hungry, but no one was in poor health, and they found that in places where the ascent was nearly vertical, steps had been cut into the rock or built out from it with bricks. Their pace remained steady, and in less time than Tesca had imagined, the cave's slope lessened, and now they were traveling generally level. There was more evidence of modification to the tunnels as well. Tesca saw several side tunnels blocked off by what appeared to be thick plugs of stone. "These are sealed off to block other ways into the Abbey?"
"For the most part," Brother Hollum answered. "Some were put in place centuries ago to divert the course of the underground river when we began the project to harness its power. I must confess I don't know the details of those works myself."
"You'd much rather look up at the sky than under the ground," Tesca said.
The monk laughed.
"Indeed, and some of my brethren feel exactly the opposite. They could tell you a detailed history of the engineering works down here if you're interested. And," he added with a wry smile, "if you had a week's time to spare."
Tesca smiled, then paused as they passed a narrow side tunnel.
"Wait, I felt a breeze."
Hollum stopped and turned around.
"I'm sorry?"
"I'm sure I felt..."
Tesca put a finger in his mouth and held it up, slowly walking back to the dark opening on their right.
"Here," he said after a few paces. "There's a faint breeze coming from down here."
"That can't be right,"
Hollum replied, coming back to join him.
"Give me the torch for a moment," Tesca asked.
After Hollum passed it over, he leaned against the rock to brace his arm and held the torch in front of the opening. Everyone watched, then a rustle of exclamation moved through the procession as the torch's flame flickered, bending slightly away from the opening, pushed by a current of air.
"That's not right," Hollum said, looking alarmed. "There shouldn't be any openings to the surface this close to the Abbey."
"Perhaps a tunnel collapsed," Tesca offered. "You want to investigate?"
"Briefly," the monk replied. "The abbot must be told if these tunnels are no longer secure."
He dropped his voice to an urgent whisper.
"We are directly beneath the farmstead now."
"I understand," Tesca said. "I'll take a quick look and come right back."
Drawing Angus's sword, he headed down the tunnel. The tunnel ended in a stone plug like all the others, but Tesca studied the torch, watching the flame continue to bend, and he traced the flow of air up and to the left. There was a dark space in the roof of the tunnel there, and when he raised the torch high, he saw a hole in the stone, large enough for him to fit through. The shape of the hole was a near-perfect ellipse, and although he was no scholar, he was fairly confident that such shapes did not occur naturally in caves. There were places to put his feet, allowing him to climb up for a better look, but a closer examination of the hole only made things more confusing. It was the entrance to a shaft that rose at a sharp angle, going away from the abbey. It maintained the same elliptical shape throughout its length and had slender depressions set into it at regular intervals, places for hands and feet to find purchase, which confirmed his suspicion that the tunnel was artificial. But there were no marks of masonry to be seen, no evidence of a chisel or pick. The stone inside the shaft was perfectly smooth, like many parts of the cave floor he'd walked upon today, where Hallam had said the river once flowed, wearing away all irregularities. As he stared into the shaft, a faint breeze pushed against his face, and when he lowered the torch, he could see a glimmer of moonlight at the other end. Too curious to stop now, and knowing Brother Hallam would want to know more as well, he pulled himself into the shaft, leaving the torch behind. The shaft ran for some 20 feet, and Teska calculated that it was taking him above and beyond the stone plug that blocked the tunnel beneath him. Ahead, he could see the exit. Beyond that, across an open space was a wall of small gray rectangular stones, and as he approached, he knew what he was looking at. "The well," he breathed. "It's the well outside the farmhouse." He stuck his head through the hole and looked up. Moonlight was coming into the top of the well, bathing the higher portion of the shaft in a silver-gray glow, a ring circling the night sky beyond. Directly above him, there were more handholds, set into the stone bricks, leading to the top of the well. But like the rest of the strange stonework he'd seen so far, the holes weren't cut into the stone. Rather, they seemed to have been scooped out, as if the stone was wet plaster or soft clay. Or molten wax, Teska thought, reminded of a prayer shrine to Hashema that had been a short distance from Master Lorenus's home in Locus. Worshippers brought lit candles and offerings to the shrine, setting the candles on the stepped shelves around the altar and leaving them to burn down as they would. Over decades, the walls of the small shrine were coated with frozen cascades of multicolored wax, the layer inches deep in some places. The stonework here had a similar liquid quality to it. It must be the elf who did this, Teska thought as he retreated back to the caves. The one living at the abbey is a monk, the one I met in the Hall of Demons. He must know some spell to shape rock, or soften it, perhaps.
"What did you find?" Brother Hallam asked when Teska emerged from the tunnel.
Teska shook his head. "There's a small shaft cut into the roof of the tunnel, and you're not going to believe this, but it leads to the well outside the farmhouse." Hallam's mouth dropped open.
"The well? How was it? Who?"
"Questions we can't answer now," Teska said. "But if Kalisandra knew about this, she'd certainly have sent people down here. That at least is some good news."
"Yes," Hallam agreed. "We must get inside the abbey without further delay."
Taking the torch back from Teska, he led them down the tunnel at a quick pace. Very shortly, they reached the gate he had spoken of. The passageway widened here into a small chamber, and set into the tunnel where it narrowed again was a metal grill with inch-thick bars set less than a hand span's width apart. In the center of this grill was a door with a large lock built into it. "Yvette," Teska said, "it's up to you now." The Hesveshian left hand moved up to join him and Hallam, taking her lockpicks from her tunic. She knelt in front of the lock and studied it with a practiced eye, frowning.
"Who built this?"
"The lock was designed by Brother Mehdi, one of our best craftsmen."
Yvette scratched her chin.
"I should have guessed. It's not a design I'm familiar with, although I would wager there are some diagrams of Kefi locks in your archives, and this Brother Mehdi was looking at them when he was designing this."
"Can you open it?" Teska said.
"I believe so," Yvette said after a moment's consideration, opening her leather packet and setting it on the floor.
She selected two of her tools to try first.
"This may take a little time."
The little time stretched to over 10 minutes, as Yvette probed the lock with various tools, her eyes closed, murmuring to herself as she worked. Teska leaned against the wall, letting Yvette work without interruption. He had his own set of lockpicks when he set out from Kohane, but whether he'd lost them during the battle or the storm, he wasn't sure. In any case, he hadn't used them very often since leaving the Empire. Sabrian locks used the same basic design as their northern counterparts, but the details were sufficiently different that Teska needed extra time to get a northern lock open, and extra time was rarely a luxury he enjoyed. He made a note to himself to replace his set of lockpicks and incorporate their use into his training regimen. I've let that skill get rusty. Then he heard something, a sound further off, breaking up the scratching rhythm of Yvette's work. Someone's coming. Behind us? Yvette asked. No, ahead of us. Get back, Teska said, drawing his sword and taking the torch from Hollum, until we see who it is. Yvette quickly secured her tools and slipped behind him, next to Brother Hollum. A few moments later, they saw the flicker of light on the tunnel wall some distance ahead of them. Teska counted three sets of footsteps. There was a pause in the noise ahead, a sudden steadying of the reflected light, and Teska knew that the newcomers had become aware of them as well.
"Who's there?" Teska called. "We're friends of the Abbey. Brother Hollum is with us."
The light began to move once more, and a moment later, a lamp came into view around a bend in the tunnel. Teska could make out one man holding the lamp, two figures behind him, but no more than that. He squinted against the lamp's glare, painful after so many hours of feeble torchlight. The man with the lamp slowed his pace, shining his light across all three at the gate.
"Yes, it is I," Brother Hollum said, putting his face up to one of the spaces in the gate to show himself. "We are seeking refuge."
"You are heading in the wrong direction for refuge, brother," came the man's reply, shocking Teska to the core. He had never heard that man use free speak before, but he knew the tone and rhythm too well to ever mistake him for another.
"Titus."
"Carrack."
The lamp tilted down out of Teska's eyes, and the Sabrian Agentus's face emerged from the darkness as the light caught his strong features. Handsome and impassive as a statue, only the man's eyes seemed alive, gleaming in the light as he took in the situation before him.
"I was told you were dead," Titus Satak said in Sabrian, "by those who believed it to be so. Have you lied to those you call friends?"
"No," Teska replied in the same tongue. "I had not expected to survive when we parted." He could see the two figures behind Titus now, an older Sabrian with spectacles whom he did not recognize, and a tall, slender youth with auburn hair and a wide splint across a broken nose. Teska had never seen him before either, but knew him instantly. Even if Duke Stephen had not provided a description of his son for Teska to memorize, the resemblance, especially around the jawline, was unmistakable to Teska's trained eye. But he kept his face blank.
"Who are these with you?"
Satax did not reply, did not even react to the question.
"I have heard that the tale of Morellus was told for you," he said, an edge to his voice that had not been there before.
"And why not?"
"You are not worthy of it."
Teska sighed. "Still holding on to that, Titus? Remember what Lorenas taught us. The Vox in Faro is for artists, not a genti. You were his finest pupil. Surely that is greater honor than being his last."
"I am his last," Satax replied. "Lorenas never intended for you to become an agentis, Carrack. He owed your father a debt. Training you was the only coin he had to pay it."
There was a reaction behind Satax as he repeated Teska's old name. Jordan had been listening to the conversation, apparently fluent enough in Sabrian to follow the gist of it, and now his eyes flashed to Teska.
"He recognizes the name," Teska realized. "Is my father's visit here remembered by the monks? Or did he learn the name another way? Let's see what other names he knows."
"I wrote my old name in blood and threw it in the fire," Teska said, "accepting the name Lorenas gave me, Teska Sicarius."
Jordan paled, recognizing that name as well.
"I have borne that name ever since," Teska went on without pause, giving Satax no opportunity to notice Jordan's reaction.
"Why would Lorenas have performed that ritual if he did not intend for me to become an agentis?"
"You never mastered the inner training. You never gave up the name you threw into the fire," Satax said. "You proved that when you attacked the Valentii."
Teska said nothing, but Satax smiled thinly, seeing some reaction on Teska's face.
Did you imagine you had gotten away with it? You were seen, Karak. A handful of servants escaped the fire, talking of a white man who killed the patriarch's guards, chased the old man through his home before murdering him, then started a fire to cover his tracks. Deplorable. Disgraceful. It was handled with such sloppy execution that it was believed an escaped slave was responsible. At least you waited until Lorenus was dead before bringing such shame upon his legacy. The Sabrian shook his head with a barely perceptible motion. I gave little heed to the entire incident, until I learned that among those killed was Cado Divas. Divas was a paragon among the Agenti, the vox in ferro of the great Master Porthos. Only one with such training as ours would be capable of killing him. And since the witnesses swore the killer was white, the conclusion was inescapable. Satax paused, his gaze taking in Tesca's appearance. You attacked one of the oldest and most powerful noble houses of the Empire, killing both its patriarch and the Agentes who served him. But no master gave you the order to do so. An act of personal vengeance, nothing more. If Tesca Sicarius had ever existed, he would have known better. And if Lorenus had known what was to come after his death, he would have killed you himself.
Very likely, Tesca agreed. But he did not. And so here we are, on opposite sides of a locked gate. You want out, we want in. Unless we work together, no one is going anywhere. He gave Satax a short bow, one used between peers. I offer ships in the night. Satax's nostrils flared briefly at the suggestion, which Tesca knew for Satax was an expression of bristling outrage.
The truce of passage! Only a Agenti may trust each other enough to keep it.
You have forgotten our master's teachings, Titus. It's not about trusting me to keep the truce. It's about trusting you can stop me if I break it. Titus looked Tesca up and down once more.
And you believe you could stop me in turn? You could never defeat me in the sparring pit.
We're not in the sparring pit, Tesca replied, meeting the Sabrian's eyes. Titus, your opinion of whether I am an Agentes or not is irrelevant. You are on a mission for your master. You need to come through this gate to complete it, and regardless of the name you think he deserves to bear, the man who slew Cado Divas in single combat stands in your way. He paused, letting that sink in. I too am on a mission, and I offer ships in the night, so that we may pass each other by and proceed with those missions. I will not break that truce. If you choose to break it, I might not survive the exchange. But neither will you. The promise rolled out of him, perfect truth, and he saw Satax's eyes narrow in wary suspicion. Pride or duty, Titus? Decide. If you have a key, we will step back against this wall and allow you to open the gate without interference. Your party comes out and presses against the other wall, and then we will go past. Titus Satax stared back at Tesca for an infinite second before giving a quick nod, less than the bow Tesca had given him, but enough. Back up, Tesca called down the column. Spread out against the right wall here. Liam came forward as the rest of the group did as asked.
What is all this?
A truce. These men are leaving the Abbey, and we're letting them pass before we go in. He touched Liam's arm as the former acolyte frowned, switching to Tarrandon.
You'll not pick a fight here, understand? The man leading the other group, you'll let him pass unchallenged, or you'll be dead before you hit the floor. Know him I do, and there's no deadlier blade in all the world.
Tesca's claim rankled the northerner, but at length Liam nodded.
Keep my blade sheathed, I will, he said, before moving back to the other end of the column.
Once Tesca's party was against the wall, Tesca drew his sword and waited. Satax passed the lantern back to the older Sabrian behind him, then drew a key from a pocket and unlocked the gate.
As the gate swung open, he drew the argument and retort with the same perfection Tesca remembered and glided into the wider passage, sidestepping like a crab, keeping Tesca in front of him. There was a shuffle at the gate as the older Sabrian shoved the youth through.
"Jordan?"
Brother Hollem shouted in surprise. Although Tesca had been able to see well enough in the dim light to recognize the boy, Hollem had not.
"What are you?"
"He is our guide," Satax replied in free speak. "He will show us the way out of these tunnels."
"I tried to tell you. I've never been past this gate," Jordan protested. "I got you this far, but I don't know where to go from here." He looked at Tesca and Hollem with a searching, pleading expression.
"Leave him behind, Titus," Tesca said. "I will tell you how to get out of here." Not 50 yards down that tunnel is a small side passage that has been sealed off. In the ceiling above that barrier is a narrow shaft leading to the surface.
"And where does this shaft come out?"
"The well on the farmstead outside the abbey."
Satax nodded, and Tesca realized the man already knew the answer. It was a test of Tesca's honesty.
"The boy comes with us until we reach this exit you speak of."
"Very well. I will follow you at a distance. When you leave the tunnel, he comes back with me."
"Agreed."
Satax flicked one of his blades away from the gate, motioning to the other Sabrian and Jordan to head in that direction. Tesca passed his torch to Brother Hollem and signaled for the monk to lead the others through the gate. Then, taking Liam's torch, he followed after Satax, who kept glancing behind him to make sure Tesca did not get too close.
"Here!" the older Sabrian called, turning into the side passage. "I can see the shaft in the ceiling."
"Very well," Satax replied.
He looked at Jordan and flicked his blade again. The youth needed no explanation, quickly crossing the distance between the two Agenti and slipping past Tesca.
"I retain the key to the gate, Carrick," the Sabrian said. "If you have played me false, I shall return and kill you."
"I have not played you false, Titus. Our missions are on different courses."
Satax stared at Tesca.
"Perhaps one day, Carrick, I shall be given a mission that will allow me to satisfy both pride and duty. Until then."
He gave Tesca a quick nod, then disappeared into the side tunnel, following the older man. Tesca backed away for several paces before glancing behind him to look at Jordan.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," the youth replied. "He didn't hurt me."
Nodding, Tesca sheathed his sword, but kept the torch in his off hand to gently take Jordan's arm and steer them back toward the abbey. Jordan stared into Tesca's face, searching.
"Are you really?"
"Yes," Tesca replied, suspecting he was answering several of Jordan's questions at once.
"How did you get yourself pressed into service as a guide?"
"I grew up here. I know every inch of this place, whether the monks wanted me to or not. Somehow those two found out about that."
He was silent for a few moments, then,
"What is the vox in ferro? The voice of conclusion? The inferred authority? I thought I spoke Sabrian fairly well, but I don't know that term."
Tesca gave a rueful chuckle. "The closest translation would be the last word. Sabrians put a great value on the final work an artist produces before their death, considering it to be their defining statement on that art form."
"Oh," Jordan replied, "and it applies to Agenti as well, at least as far as Titus thinks?"
"What Titus thinks is his own affair," Tesca replied as they entered the wider portion of the passage.
Ahead of them, they saw Brother Hollem standing just inside the open gate waiting for them, a relieved smile breaking out on his face.
"Jordan," the monk breathed, gripping the youth's arms and shaking his head, "you will drive me to an early grave. What happened? You are guiding them down here? How did you know about the gate? And where did they get a key?"
At this, Jordan winced.
"They took it from Brother Pharaoh, or who we thought was Brother Pharaoh."
Hollem drew back, puzzled.
"What are you talking about?"
Jordan shook his head, pointing further down the tunnel.
"He's back here, in the lab he set up with Drusus. I'll show you."
Interlude.
"Took your scrumpin' time, Cabot,"
Ambrose growled as the smuggler led him and Oryk out of the farmhouse.
Had to wait until dark before Will said the coast was clear.
Well, thank the Father for Will. Have you been watching this place the whole time?
More or less, Cabot muttered. The fanatics laid a trap for Sicarius when he went back to the barn this morning. Then they got the Abbey's gate to open somehow. They're fighting inside the walls now.
And where's Sicarius? Still in the barn?
Cabot shook his head.
Escaped after the big fight started. He and some other folk headed south toward that grove you were in when you were captured. Then they left that grove in a wagon. Looked like they were heading for the trail I found to bring us up here.
So,
came Oryk's voice behind them, thick and muddled,
they're headed back to Maipur?
Might be, Cabot mused. Didn't see the elf with them, though.
Ambrose nodded.
Aye, that bastard's come all this way. He won't leave without her.
And neither will we, Cabot said.
You're insane, said Oryk, miserable and desperate. Both of you. Ambrose, we can't stay here. They took our horses, our weapons, and our money. Even if these people could be bargained with, we've got nothing else they want. And they knocked out three of my teeth. Oh, relax, Oryk,
Ambrose sneered.
You get them replaced after we get back to Maipur. Your mouth'll be worth three times mine.
He glanced around, and when his gaze fell upon the well a short distance away, he smiled through cracked lips.
That's what we need first, he laughed, staggering toward it. My mouth's as dry as a keffi's.
He broke off, stumbling back and falling to the ground as a dark figure suddenly sprang out of the well, two blades flashing from his belt. The figure stood over him, the long blade touching his throat.
Remain silent if you wish to live, came the quiet command. The distant light from the abbey reflected off the man's smooth ebon skin. Without taking his eyes off Ambrose, Garrick, or Oryk, the Sabrian leaned back toward the well, calling out a quick phrase in his native tongue. With a good deal more panting and struggling, a second Sabrian clambered out of the well, trailing a rope behind him. Once he had gotten to his feet, he then began to draw the rope up toward him, and before long, two traveling packs and a stack of books were brought up.
You, the Sabrian said to Ambrose, you are one of these pilgrims.
It was not a question.
You seek entrance into the abbey.
Ambrose could feel the edge of the man's blade against his neck and a thin trickle of something wet soaking into the back of his tunic. He nodded quickly.
Descend into this well and you will find a passage that leads to a cave, the Sabrian continued. Take the right-hand passage and you will find a gate. Beyond that, the tunnel leads into the bowels of the abbey.
Sheathing his short blade, the Sabrian drew something out of a pocket and dropped it into Ambrose's hand, then stepped back to join the other Sabrian. Without taking his eyes off of his quarry, he slung one of the traveling packs over his shoulder. Then, once the other Sabrian had secured his own pack and picked up the bound stack of books, the two of them retreated, circling around the other side of the farmhouse and quickly melting into the darkness.
Who in the hells was that?
Oryk asked as he and Garrick ran up to join Ambrose as he scrambled to his feet.
Moves like Sicarius, Garrick said. Will says he holds them blades the same way too.
Aye,
Ambrose breathed, touching his neck and hissing as he brushed the slender cut.
So now there's two of them.
He stared in the direction the Sabrians had gone.
Ali always said there were more men like that down in the Empire, that somebody had to teach Sicarius his tricks.
He gave a nervous laugh.
But after seeing that one, don't think Sicarius learned half as much as he could have.
Why didn't he kill us?
Oryk asked.
It would have made his escape easier.
Aye, Garrick replied in the same flat tone he always used. Wanted us alive for something. What did he give you?
Ambrose squinted down at the object, then held it high to let the weak light from the camp illuminate it. A moment later, he chuckled, turning the key in his hand.
Well, well, now we've something to bargain with.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.